All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for coming. I'm pleased today to introduce Jenny Lee, who is a vice chair of the Unicode Emoji Subcommittee, graduated from the college herself, and is back in Cambridge today to talk with us all about emoji. So please join me in welcoming Jenny Lee.
Thank you. I stand. So here is good. So a fun fact, Professor Malin and I actually were in the same class at Harvard. And I actually took CS50 as a freshman because I was an applied math and economics major. But at that point, it was not like the lifestyle brand that has since become. So I definitely appreciate like all the bells and whistles and the fact that we now get free pizza and like lots of live streaming. So David, I guess maybe he saw a Jimmy Kimmel appearance I had on Emoji and asked me to come speak. So I'm gonna give you sort of a fun overview of like, how does an emoji become an emoji? So I'm going to start the story with my friend, whose name is Yiying Liu, who is a designer very well known for having designed a Twitter fail whale. And she's Chinese-Australian, I'm Chinese-American, and we were texting about dumplings, because that is what Chinese-ish women do with each other. And so I texted her this photo of dumplings that I was cooking, and she was like, yum, 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 fried dumplings, yay, knife and fork, knife and fork. And then she's like, I'm surprised that Apple doesn't have a dumpling emoji. And I was like, oh, huh, good point. And then that would probably have been the end of anything, because many conversations just sort of end on the like surprise that something doesn't exist. But half an hour later, on my screen pops like this dumpling with blinking eyes. So you don't actually get the full effect of like the bling bling dumpling that she had created. And she had decided to design her own dumpling emoji because she was a designer and she's like, I can fix this. And I was really kind of startled when I discovered there was no dumpling emoji, right? Because like, I knew that emoji were originally Japanese, and that's why there are a lot of Japanese foods on the keyboard, right? So there's ramen, there's the bento box, there's curry, there's tempura. There are like kind of a bunch of weird Japanese foods. Like, I think these are like, I've seen this on the streets of Japan. I think they're like fishy things on a stick. This is a fish cake. What is it called?
Oden.
Oden, yeah. They have, and they're fishy things, right, on a stick, basically. I mean, and there's even, like, the whole, like, rice ball that looks like it's had a bikini wax. But there was no dumpling emoji, which I thought was very strange because, like, if you think about it, dumplings are a universal food. Like, every country has their version of a dumpling. Like, it's, empanada or pierogi or, palmini or like even ravioli is a form of dumpling. Like essentially like there's this universal truth of yummy goodness inside a carbohydrate shell that basically every culture has discovered. So I was like, okay, dumplings are universal. And of course, emoji are universal. And the fact that therefore there wasn't a dumpling emoji told me whatever system in place was like basically broken. So I was like, I'm gonna go fix this. I had like no idea where emoji came from, but I was like a woman on a mission to find herself her dumpling emoji. So I was like, who controls emoji? Knew nothing about it, but yay Google. And so very quickly you get to the website, and I did, of the Unicode Consortium, which is a nonprofit organization based in Mountain View, California, who has, at that point I discovered, 12 full voting members, 9 of which were US multinational tech companies. So this was in late 2005 when I started going down the rabbit hole. So these companies, the 9, were things like Oracle and IBM and Microsoft, Adobe, Google, Apple, Facebook, and Yahoo. Of the 3 that were not US multinational tech companies, they were a German company, SAP, the Chinese company, Huawei, which no one had heard of back then, but like a lot of people have heard of now, and then the government of Oman. Right, so these were the 12 full voting members who paid $18,000 a year to vote on emoji. And I was like kind of horrified by this, like this sort of like, tech cabal plus Oman. So I was like very indignant. First of all, and I also discovered like $18,000 times like 12, it wouldn't take that much money to take over the Unicode Consortium. But luckily there's like this tiny little loophole, which is that you can join as an individual for $75, no voting power, but you get to show up at the meetings and you get added to their mailing list. So, I'm like, okay, I paid my $75 online. using a credit card and like became a Unicode member, like joined the, you know, email. And I was like, okay, I'm on a mission. And so they had these meetings. And so, you know, you're on the email list and they send out this RSVP request and said, who's going to come to the next meeting? You know, it was like in October, I think, or November. I looked at my calendar and I was like, I will be in the Bay Area at that time. And I like RSVP back. I'm like, I will come. And I don't completely know what I was expecting. So essentially, maybe like a little Congress, like a very mini Congress or something, but I took my, you know, I got on public transit and went to the Apple headquarters. This was in Sunnyvale. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I thought it was like there would be like 100 people, maybe like the number of people in this room, but sort of like more neatly organized and sort of a, you know, a Nancy Pelosi kind of style like arc. But it is not what I found. This is the room where people decide. These are the people who decide your emoji. This is a photo from the November 2015. And it was really weird because, first of all, they were super excited to see me because most of these people have been working together for like 25 years, and like new people don't just like randomly show up. They're like, you know, tell us about yourself, what brings you here, we're so happy to see you. And it totally had the vibe of like a new church, like really, really, really nice old white people. And so the sort of group, you know, they were basically mostly male, mostly engineers, mostly older. And, you know, one of them even had a daughter that had made him a shirt that said shadowy emoji overlord. This is the chair of the Unicode Emoji Subcommittee and the president of Unicode, Mark Davis. So they just sort of were debating about emoji, you know, things like milk. Should it be a glass of milk? Should it be a bottle of milk? Should it be a carton of milk? Because cartons aren't universal. You know, then there was like, so, you know, kind of big debate about milk. And then there was like this question about beans. Red beans, green beans, black beans, like which bean should we choose? And there was like paralysis over the color of beans. So there's no bean emoji. If you haven't noticed, there is a glass of milk emoji. And I was like, this system is like clearly broken and like I'm gonna go fix it. So I created a group, it's called Emoji Nation, whose motto is emoji by the people, for the people. So it was me and, you know, my friend Yi Ying from way back when. And then, you know, our motto is more inclusive and representative emoji, you know, starting with a dumpling, which was our mission to begin with. So, you know, started this campaign, we're gonna get the dumpling emoji, and made a Kickstarter video and the dumpling emoji project. I think dumplingemoji.org is still alive. And I think, okay, does the video work? And we made this video.
Dumplings are one of the most universal cross-cultural foods in the world. Georgia has khinkali, Japan has gyoza, Korea has mandu, Italy has ravioli, Poland has pierogi, Russia has pelmeni, Argentina has empanadas, Jewish people have kreplech, China has pot stickers, Nepal and Tibet have momos. Yet somehow, despite their popularity, there is no dumpling emoji in the standard set. Why is that? Emoji exists for pizza, tempura, sushi, spaghetti, hot dog, and now tacos, which Taco Bell takes credit for. We need to right this disparity. Dumplings are global. Emoji are global. Isn't it time we brought them together? Oh yeah, and while we're at it, how about an emoji for Chinese takeout?
So, you know, kind of raised like, I think, we raised like $12,000 so that we could join the Unicode Consortium. And so Emoji Nation became a member. And, you know, I wrote my little emoji proposal with a bunch of us, all kind of dumpling lovers together. And we got it passed in January 2016. So this is Yi Ying with, a mysterious, this was then the other co-chair of the emoji subcommittee from Apple, who they roll anonymously at Apple, but there he is. And so these were our original set. So along with dumpling, we did takeout box and chopsticks and then fortune cookie. And to be honest, I don't think fortune cookie would have like gotten in on its own merits, but on the sort of coattails of dumpling and takeout box and chopsticks, it kind of made it. And so it took a couple, a while. These are the ones now on Apple. Like very photorealistic, like dumpling, I have to say, like totally weird, like dead Pac-Man interpretation of the fortune cookie on half of eye. Like, first of all, there's like no mouth and no thing. It's like totally like some kind of dead three-dimensional Pac-Man. So, you know, it kind of got me into this like deep rabbit hole of like, well, how does an emoji become an emoji? And it is actually like a really weird process. So, you know, first of all, let's say you have an idea. And this is what's really nice. Anyone can submit an emoji proposal. So you have your idea, and then you write a proposal and you submit it to the emoji subcommittee, which kind of talks about it, and sometimes they'll kick it back to you. And you kind of go around and around the circle. You know, they'll have feedback. They don't like your design. They don't think your statistics are good. It's like very, these meetings are really funny because they're kind of like C-SPAN, but like around emoji. And the emoji subcommittee then, you know, at a certain point when it's good, it'll kick it to the full committee. So factors for inclusion, like what kinds of things does the committee care about? So things, you know, if it's popular demand, frequently requested, which they, interestingly enough, kind of use like how many times the term appears on like Google search or YouTube, or for a while there was Instagram hashtags as a way of like measuring demand. And this is also just like the general disease of like engineers, which is they love to measure things, and if it can't be measured, they sometimes can't value it, and which is kind of interesting, right? Because they always want to try to map like the world into like metrics. And you know, one can have these very extensive debates of whether or not, you know, demand can be measured through like whether or not the term appears in Google or in YouTube. But they kind of pluses for multiple usage and meanings. So like fox, like it can mean both fox and, you know, like a kind of like wily or sly, or an owl can mean like wise, or a skunk can mean smelly. And then one of the necessary things, it has to be able to like kind of appear distinct at little emoji sizes. And then there is sort of sometimes a value in terms of like filling a gap or completeness. So for a while there, the only, we had hearts for red, yellow, green, blue, purple, white, maybe white, black, but we didn't have orange. So then we, you know, orange, really kind of like orange, the orange heart actually kind of slid in there basically because like all the other hearts were there, but like bizarrely orange heart was missing. Factors against emoji inclusion are basically too specific, too narrow. So like a very specific kind of dog as opposed to dogs in general, redundant. So like a good example there was we had a proposal from like one of the turkey companies. They wanted a roast turkey, but we already had a live turkey, so we just decided like both of them basically can mean Thanksgiving. So like you don't need two forms of turkey, cooked and not cooked. Though we do have two forms of chicken, cooked and not cooked. We have all actually the whole life cycle of a chicken. I don't know if you've ever noticed. We have like the egg in like a little like, you know, shell. I mean, sorry, egg, then the chick in a shell, chick by itself, full chicken, then cooked chicken. And then if you really want to complete, we also have poo at the end, smiling poo at the end. And then this is key, actually. No logos, brands, deities, and celebrities. So this really confuses people. They're like, why can't we get the Coke can? Or why can't we get like the Nike swoosh? And basically, because you can't. Because there's like all kinds of IP issues. So no deities either. So like no Buddha, no Muhammad, no deities, no Ganesh, you know. And when you hear about like Kimmojis, like those are not really emoji, they're essentially stickers. But so that's really key. Like these, once an emoji, always an emoji, they kind of look for longevity. And so once it kind of gets out of the subcommittee, it gets get kicked to the full committee, the full Unicode technical committee. Those are the people that were in the room. And then four times a year they meet. And then each one of those, they kind of, you know, vote to pass a set of emoji for like provisional or basically candidates at that point. And so, you know, four times a year, they kind of like vote on ones that will become candidates. And then once a year, as a whole batch, they vote. And those get selected for the next year. So it takes actually a pretty long time. So once a year, they lock the emoji. And once it's locked, it goes through all the different, like, you know, vendors like Google and Apple, and they have to start basically adding it into just, you know, all the software, all the designs, lots of things happen. They keep on telling us it's very, very expensive to get these emoji pass. So these are all like companies with like billions of dollars on their sort of books. So I'm not super sympathetic when they're like, you know, five more emoji is like overwhelming for their folks. So then those kind of then show up on your phone and laptops for Apple. Most of the updates happen in November, like late October, November. I think we just, if you guys have updated your iOS devices, because they're like Apple's very persistent in like making you update your device, you will have seen the latest generation for the 2019 emoji. So, ta-da, that is how it becomes an emoji. It takes about 18 to 24 months. So when I first proposed my dumpling emoji, it was like my first got my idea in September, like September of 2015. I proposed it in January of 2016, and it hit the phone in November-ish, October-ish of 2017. So very, very long time. It's a very, 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 very long time. You know, Emoji Nation, like, you know, it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, you know, just like the whole video thing, but we kind of like went on a little crusade to help kind of pass a bunch of inclusive and representative emojis. So we like to think of ourselves as the voice of the people in the room that matters. So one of the interesting things is like, why does Unicode, this like, you know, consortium cabal thing, control emoji? So part of it is sort of a natural accident of just what Unicode does. To give you some history, you know, there's sort of debates about when emoji started, but essentially it started in Japan sometime in the late 1990s. You know, there's a SoftBank collection, a Docomo collection. This one is sort of the famed kind of like, ooh, it's all in color, and was introduced in 1999, probably created, I think, in 97, and super, so famous that they were collected. This is very funny, as in the Museum of Modern Art collected the emoji as part of their permanent collection, which is of course very strange if you think about it, because they're just images, so there's nothing to collect or hold. But from a museum perspective, it actually, a lot of collecting of digital property has a lot to do with the IP rights and being able to recreate and create them, you know, and all kinds of stuff. So what happened then was in about 2007, so emoji were incredibly popular in Japan, and at a certain point, you know, all the phones and all, you know, across all the different carriers had their own little versions of emoji. And then what happened was Gmail landed basically in Japan, and people would you know, send their emoji using Gmail on their phones, but of course Gmail couldn't capture the emojis because these were just proprietary systems. So you would like have this kind of weird situation where like these symbols would get lost as you kind of moved between, you know, email and the phones. And then of course, and all the phones had their different versions. And so essentially Google and some others kind of went to Unicode and said, can you please help us kind of coordinate this? Because essentially, what is Unicode's mission? This sometimes gets lost in all the late night, you know, television shows, but Unicode has a very interesting mission. It's to enable everyone speaking every language on the earth to be able to use their language on their computer or smartphones. And they, you know, basically see it as a form of human right. It's because if you cannot communicate with your language in the digital era, it essentially will become extinct. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, they started with, you know, back in way back when, with like encoding like Russian and Arabic, and you know, the second generation was like Chinese, which is a little bit hard. Chinese, Japanese, and Korean were a little harder. And then you kind of like worked their way down. You know, you got to like hieroglyphics. Now they're basically at a lot of minority languages, and sometimes like dead languages right now. So they have three main projects. This is kind of key. I know that everyone pays attention to emoji. That's kind of what I kind of came down the rabbit hole with. So they encode characters, including emoji. Now they're over 100,000 characters encoded. That's like what everyone is knows them for. But from a practical perspective, if you are a computer science person, they actually have two other things that are very important. So they have localization resources, which is known as the Common Locale Data Repository, also known as CLDR. So that tells you, like, you know, does the month in this country, does the date format work, you know, MMDDYYYY, or is it like, you know, DDMMYYYY, you know, or is it a 24-hour clock, or is it, you know, so all kinds of locality information gets stored in these sort of localized resources, including all the various names for the emoji in the various different languages. They also have programming languages, programming libraries to do all of this stuff, and that's called the International Components for Unicode, or ICU. And so what's really funny is CLDR is the name. This is what they call it. Most people actually don't even, I had to Google to figure out what the whole name is, because we just call it CLDR. And so very funny, I guess like some guy's girlfriend or something misheard CLDR, and so she was like, what's a seal deer? And so she made him a little seal deer for when once this is like very operated on. This poor stuffed animal had all kinds of surgery that are like, it's like really problematic. So he you know, she made him a little seal deer. And this has become sort of the unofficial mascot of like that part of Unicode. So it's, you know, they introduced, so they started the proposal in 2007. It actually took into 2010 to introduce the first generation of emoji, Unicode 6.0. They just like had a bunch of the emoji, including, you know, one of our lovely, I think a poo emoji, smiling poo emoji is among this. So they basically took all of the, you know, different versions of the emoji from the different carriers and basically try to reconcile them, not of all of which were like completely reconcilable, but like whatever. So like one of the weird examples is, you know, one Japanese carrier had like women with bunny ears as like a portrait shot, so just one woman. And that was sort of, I think, on the Android side. Then separately on whoever Apple was working with had like two women in bunny ears, like total full body. So like clearly bunny ears are important in Japan, but those got matched to each other even though they're obviously very different once you send them back and forth, but whatever. So these were the original ones. And what is, you know, how does encoding work? So basically, for those of you who may remember one of the first lectures, I don't know, David sent me his lecture notes, but you know, basically a Unicode code point is a unique number assigned to each Unicode character. So each character gets one little piece of Unicode real estate. You know, this face with tears of joy, so with tears of joy. This is its little Unicode like code point. If you, in, you know, hexadecimal, if you translate to hexadecimal, ends up being this number, and you translate to binary, it looks like that number. So those are all the same as they kind of like move through whatever like parser is interpreting all the emoji. So, you know, they kind of land in 2010, and I don't know, when you talk to the original emoji proposers, they don't necessarily think anything big was gonna happen, because they encode kind of like characters all the time, right? Like little, you know, like poker, like for when you play cards and when you play chess, and wingding. So it wasn't like that big a deal to just add this sort of set of images into the Unicode library. But then Apple decided to kind of basically put a keyboard, the emoji keyboard, onto our phones. And then suddenly you can see, you kind of basically see where like emoji was kind of hanging out. And then iOS decided to add, you know, make the keyboard more accessible with emoji, and then boop, boop, boop. And there it goes. That is the rising popularity of emoji all the time. So again, anyone can submit to Unicode. DocSubmit@unicode.org. My friend Rick kind of oversees that. It's a very funny account to get things at. So, you know, kind of proposals we've helped pass. This is Rayouf Al-Humaidi, who is a 15-year-old girl when she decided she wanted a hijab emoji, and so she wrote in and we helped. She actually got into Harvard, but she was Stanford, but we will forgive her for that. So she's now at Stanford, and as I say, like, you can come to the Unicode meetings now on the ones that happen on a quarterly basis. So that was her original proposal when it first came over, and I was super excited. Then I have a group of friends in Argentina who really went all out for the mate emoji, which actually just showed up. I think that should have showed up on your phones this year. I mean, this was like national news, like the largest, or not the largest, but like the most prestigious paper, La Nación, in Buenos Aires in Argentina, had a full page Sunday article about their like campaign for the mate emoji. Very weirdly, we also had this group, sort of a girls advocacy group, that wanted a menstruation emoji, which I get. But of course, they like proposed bloody underwear, which is like a terrible emoji for all kinds of reasons. So I was like, ugh. And so we convinced them to do blood drop, so that, you know, menstruation, you can moon and blood drop calendar and a blood drop. We even got them sort of briefs and a blood drop. So, you know, like I said, who can propose emoji? All kinds of people. So skin tones, you know, those wonderful skin tones that you see that kind of change the emoji everywhere. Those were actually proposed by a mom out of Texas named Katrina Parrott. Just a mom, like her daughter came home one day and was like, you know, I'd really like to see myself represented in emoji. And then her mom was like, that's great, honey. What's an emoji? You know, and once she found out, she works in procurement. So I think she worked for NASA. And so, like, she can handle paperwork. Like, she can handle bureaucracy. So a lot of that goes to her credit, a woman named Katrina Parrott. Like, this is not, like, you know, the white men and the white nerdy men in the room in Mountain View or Sunnyvale coming up with skin tones. So Women's Flat Shoe, if you guys have seen this ballet flat, that was sort of a reaction by from a mom of four. Oh, no, actually, wait, let's see. She, the person who also worked on that also got a one-piece bathing suit because she's really bothered by the fact the only form of skin wear was, you know, itsy bitsy teeny polka dot, yellow polka dot bikini. Like, obviously, like, weirdly, overtly sexualized. And so it was actually done by a mom of, like, three, now four girls. So when I met her, she had three, now she has four. When she had spent many, many years pregnant and breastfeeding and was, like, not wearing heels. And so up until that point, all the heels on the keyboard, all the shoes, women's shoes, all had heels, right? Sandals had heels, boots had heels, everything had heels. Stilettos had heels. So that is now, we have her sort of to thank. She got a lot of press out of it, in part because she is a PR person. And just like random people. There's like this German who wanted, like, you know, what we call the Colbert emoji, like, you know. So he like wrote it in, you know, on LaTeX and like it got passed. Then governments, we had literally the Finnish equivalent of the State Department propose a sauna emoji, which is like terrible. Like, first of all, these are very, very sad, naked people with club feet. So it was from, yes, it was the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. So they proposed this. We kind of helped shape it into like maybe a little bit like more clear. And it was, you know, the women's with the spoon and then wearing a towel, a little bit more modest, but like very bizarrely in a translation of like telephone, which is emoji, it just basically became person in a steamy room. So it's like basically, I don't know, have you seen these? It's like person coming out of a shower, essentially. That was originally, so this is the morphing that happened in the sort of whole Unicode proposal game. You know, why do I care about emoji? So one of the reasons I grew up speaking Chinese, and that gives you a very interesting perspective on emoji, right? Because, you know, if you think about it, like, in some ways, Chinese are the original form of emoji, along with hieroglyphics, you know, and these are actually, you know, this is like fire way back when, that's a modern fire character, and then, of course, the fire emoji. This is mouth, you know, there's... you know, looks very mouth-like. There's tree or wood, and then moon, and then sun, right? These are all, you know, you can kind of see this universality of objects that have been depicted both, you know, whether or not in the Shang Dynasty or now in form of like colorful little glyphs on your iPhone. And what's kind of really fun about like Chinese characters, you can like start mixing and matching all the little things. So, for example, you have two trees. You basically have a forest. Oops. Ta-da! You know, if you take Ming, this character, this is basically you take a sun and a moon together, and it basically means bright. Ta-da! But you get more fun. Like, so here is, and you kind of like can see the psychology of a culture. So this is basically a roof with a pig. So that lower creature is a pig, it's a roof. So you're like, oh, maybe it's like a farm, maybe, you know, or like a barn. But no, this actually means, jia means home, this is or family. So basically, home is where your pigs are, which I think says a lot about China at that time. So another fun one, oh, super fun. So this character, Radical, means woman or girl. And you could, you know, maybe it's like she's like curtsying or like whatever. So all kinds of ways in Chinese characters. So this is my favorite one. Again, we have the roof, we have the woman. So you're like, oh, roof and woman. Like maybe it means home or means family, right? Like no, but actually no, it actually means peace. So an means peace. So like things are at peace when the woman is under a roof at home or whatever. So, you know, very similarly, you have the woman, you have a kid or boy, depending on baby boy. If you put all of those together, you're like, oh, maybe that also means family, but no, it means good. So our standard for good is a woman with a baby boy. So that, all kinds of like issues about that. And all kinds of combinations as radical shows up in Chinese. So what, three women together means evil or wicked. So very like Macbethy, like whatever. And this character means greedy. This character means slave. This character means jealous. This character means like to betray or, you know, adultery. I mean, very loosely interpreted can be adultery. So you're like, oh, you know, like, and growing up as like, you know, your little 6-year-old girl learning your characters, not like the adultery character at that point, but you know, you're like, this is, you know, kind of subliminally kind of sending all kinds of messages to my little, like, you know, developing brain. But there were also all kinds of issues with emoji in that way, right? So until 2016, there are many ways you could be a man in a job on your emoji keyboard. You could be a policeman, you could be a detective, you could be a Buckingham Palace guard, you can be Santa Claus. You could be Santa Claus in all kinds of colors, you could be Santa Claus. But until 2015 or 2016, there were only four things you could be as a woman on the emoji keyboard. So they were princess, bride, dancer, and Playboy bunny. So those were our jobs, right? So like clearly like all kinds of issues, all, you know, Japan, like whatever, this is like so problematic. And so what's interesting is we can now talk about the power of combining emoji. So it turns out a lot of the emoji on your keyboard actually aren't assigned code points. They're actually like a bunch of emoji kind of squished together. So skin tones are one of those examples. Like sometimes if you send something to an old, like someone with an old phone or sometimes like Gmail, you'll see like emoji start breaking apart. So you'll get, so essentially they're skin tones, but they're usually the yellow person with like a little square after it, based on the Fitzpatrick scale of skin tones, which kind of has to do with skin cancer very oddly. But we also have this idea of ZWJ, which stands for zero width joiner. Very interestingly, kind of mostly used in like languages like Arabic, where you want to kind of glue characters together. Sometimes you'll see them in English where you have like an F and an L, and they're kind of glued into a very nice like ligature. That kind of invisible FL-ness is often sometimes this zero width joiner. So we glue things all together. You put rainbow and a flag, and you get a rainbow flag. Actually, it's actually, I think the other way around. It's a flag, then a rainbow. You get rainbow flag. And actually, a lot of the women, we like worked really hard. Google gets a lot of credit for this. These occupations are oftentimes, almost always actually, a female character or a male character plus something after it. So the astronaut is a woman plus the spaceship, you know, and then the doctor, sorry, not the doctor, the chef is like a woman plus like, I think it's a frying egg. So those are creation of these like the zwidginess of, you know, farmer, food service, education, all of these. I like the one to the laptop. That one's like really fun. I have a lot of people who use that in their like Twitter handle or Instagram handle. The other really interesting thing, I'm very proud of this, is if you guys have updated your phones and you have iPhones, you'll notice suddenly you can have like interracial or multiracial people holding hands at this point. And those are also ZWJ characters. There's a lot of characters going on, like when you're creating the people holding hands. Wait, let's skip this. So we actually had worked with Tinder, yes, Tinder, to do a proposal on interracial couple emoji, which was super fun. And they care in part because I think studies have shown that, and it's like real studies, like academic studies, not just like, you know, marketing studies, that as online dating appears in a community, the rates of interracial marriage go up. So they're like, woohoo. And so now I think it's very cute. There's a new interface. We're very interested to see. There were like a combinatoric explosion of all of these creatures is like very, very high. So I was really excited to see how they did that. Did I do an ad? Oh no. Okay, there was a full page ad in the New York Times somewhere, but I must have like cut that out in my slides. Oh well. So for Emoji Nation, here's a sample of some of the emoji we've done. This doesn't include the most recent ones because I've not updated my Mac OS. So some of the ones that you've seen, like the mate emoji and the blood drop, are not on here, but you know, it gives you a sense of like the fun that we had. We did a whole bunch with GE, the science emoji, like DNA and, you know, petri dish and microbe. I'm very proud of like the toilet paper emoji. My friend's super excited about that. Lobster, we got the, we actually had a very strong supportive letter from Senator Angus King on behalf of the lobster, especially given that the other crustacean kind of representation that was already on the keyboard through crabs and shrimp, that the lobster also needed to be represented. Bagel, that was like my way of saying like Jewish without like the Star of David, on behalf of my Jewish friends. And these are some of the people who have contributed, which looks very different than the room that you saw in the beginning. So it's super fun. You can join us on our Slack. And then, you know, just sort of some interesting stats with this month, maybe last month, Unicode actually released for the first time the frequency of use. So this is, it's really funny. It's kind of interesting. So it's like tiered, and it's in log two, which I thought was very Unicode. So in theory, like, the, you know, the ones in one are used half as much as the ones in level zero, and then two half as much as the ones in level one, all the way down. And so one of the most fascinating things, and I do not know how this is possible, but essentially Faces with Tears of Joy by itself is like 10% of all emoji usage, according. So you can see it goes from Face with Tears of Joy, then the heart is really big, then heart eyes, then laughing, so, and then the hands, and then it just kind of goes all the way down. It's really fun. It's definitely worth kind of looking, because it makes you like wonder a little bit about like who and why are people using all these emoji. So, you know, it's a sort of question like, what is the future of emoji? Unicode doesn't want to be in the world of regulating emoji. It's like not really what it's designed to be doing. So I have a friend who is a professor at Stanford who is pushing, you know, he thinks it's a terrible idea for Unicode to be regulating. He and me, you know, because I always like, you know, seeing my name in LaTeX, proposed something back in 2016, which is the idea that maybe the encoding should not be kind of managed by a central regulatory body, but instead, you know, you, for the little images, you do a hash, and then the, you know, standard hash, and then the, you know, that generates a sequence of numbers, and then you look at those, that sequence of numbers, and you pass that back and forth. Of course, then you need a central repository what those numbers are, yada, 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 whatever. So then there's another one that we just introduced this year by Mark did this, which is very interesting, actually. I don't know if this will fly. I do find it very interesting. It's basically using what are known as QID numbers, which I did not know were the numbering system that's used in Wikipedia. So everything in Wikipedia apparently is like numbered, and it has a QID number. And what that does is it kind of unites things. Like, there's one Barack Obama page, right? But sorry, there's one Barack Obama QID, but he has pages in like Spanish and Russian and Chinese and Indonesian and whatever. So it kind of all reconciles. It's very funny because I think like one is like the universe and like two is Earth. Like they're very, very methodical in like their sense of humor in terms of numbering things. So one thing would be can we use these QID numbers that are in the Wikipedia numbering system as a way of sort of flexibly but standardized way of like encoding things back and forth? I don't know. I think our friends are Facebook or sort of like, or WhatsApp folks are kind of like not into this idea, but I think it's really interesting. And then, you know, what emoji are we working on? If you have questions, I'll tell you, and then that's me, ta-da. So you can reach me at like jenny@emojicon.co or jenny@emojination.org. Those are the same. Is that it? And how am I in time? I'm good? Ta-da. And if you really want, if we want to play, we can also play Emoji Spelling Bee later, which is sort of my way. I did my first Emoji Spelling Bee in Hong Kong, which is super fun. I can teach you guys how to play. So Q&A? Yes, no? Done. Yay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like people clap. I have no idea. I'm like, no. So, are there questions? We could play Emoji Spelling Bee if not. Yes.
Can you talk about how implementation in different platforms might be specific to that platform versus what you say? It's like, for example, combinatorics. Is that something that?
Yeah. Okay. So the question is like, how do the vendors or the different platforms do their thing independently of like what Unicode tells them to do? So Unicode is, so when Unicode encodes like bagel emoji, it's equivalent of encoding like a capital letter B, right? So it does not actually say what the B should look like. It gives a guidance image. But then like the platforms run off and do like kind of whatever they want to do. And sometimes that causes all kinds of issues because like sometimes it's facing left, sometimes it's facing right, sometimes it's an animal's head, sometimes it's the animal's body. And so that has caused much annoyance everywhere. And so there is sort of an effort to coordinate behind this. The designers have their own little mailing list so that they can coordinate and at least have some consistency. So this was an issue most recently with Razer was the thing that was passed, and the original image was a straight edge razor, which I was like, eh, that's like not super gender inclusive. So we were pushing them to do the plastic razor. I don't know what you call it, but you know, like the kind that you can both like use on your face and then, you know, use on your legs. You know, one of the most famous examples of like one platform going rogue is when Apple decided to take the gun emoji and make it into a squirt gun, and of course confusing like everything everywhere for a while. But very interestingly enough, like all the other platforms moved to a children's gun emoji as well. And so it's kind of interesting because in some ways you can see that the platforms, what they want or decide is like okay or not okay, kind of can get through. So like marijuana emoji or cannabis leaf emoji, we probably have had like 5 to 7 proposals, some of them very good. You know, it kind of hits a lot of, you know, the factors like distinct shape, does it have a meaning, is it properly demand, yes, 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 yes. And everyone's like, nope, like we're not gonna do this one, you know, you know, because they're all like whatever family-friendly companies who have like vested interests like all around the world, including cultures that are much more conservative. So one little fun fact is many of the alcohol emoji are not actually the alcohol; they are the container for the alcohol. So it's a wine glass emoji. It is not a wine emoji. It's a beer mug emoji, not beer. And that was sort of done out of concern of the. Of like that the Muslim countries might like have an issue. I don't think they actually did. I think it was just done proactively as a concern. So I have my own personal example of something going rogue. For a long time we had the dumpling emoji, and we specifically gave the image being like of empanada and pierogi-ish, you know, sort of like the crescent shape. And then like Facebook randomly did like a xiaolongbao, like a soup dumpling style, like the little round one, which like by itself, like even though the guidance image was not that, even though like the keywords included like empanada and pierogi, it was, I literally think it was like some Facebook designer who like went rogue because they like soup dumplings. And I actually spent so much time lobbying each and every like Facebook person in the like emoji hierarchy trying to get them to switch, and they finally did. So that was my little like impact in trying to get the consistency of all the those images together. More questions? Yes.
So it seems like you're talking about two different things. One is the platform, that is the operating system that's using Unicode and emojis, and then you're talking about apps. And
yes.
Like Facebook, or I just looked on WhatsApp, and at least on my version, I don't have your dumpling.
I don't know how old your phone is, but you should. Yeah. You should have.
I haven't updated in a while, but it's
like years. Recently. Really?
Yeah. I mean, not that long.
You should. Well, dumpling came in 2017, so I will find you your dumpling on your WhatsApp. I know for
so
WhatsApp does have its own, yeah.
My question, which is, is WhatsApp doing whatever it likes, and the platform has got whatever it likes, and sometimes they meet and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, so you will have very different versions of emoji depending on the platform. So a good example is Twitter. There's Twitter web emoji. Twitter web is actually sometimes the first to market because they can just roll it out on the web. And those will override whatever operating system you generally are sitting on. You know, that being said, Facebook used to just default to the local operating system, and then for a bunch of like competitive reasons and consistency reasons across like, you know, around the world, they wanted their own set of emoji, and then they override whatever the local operating system is. But that's why all the more important that they should be at least somewhat consistent in their look. And WhatsApp is kind of interesting. They're the most rogue of all of the platforms because they'll just like kind of go out there and do something. So they were the first to implement both Texas flag emoji, like, you know, and then transgender flag emoji. So which is nice because there was like this big debate about like the transgender flag, is it really the, you know, a stable flag even though it's less than 20 years old? And like, you know, WhatsApp was like, we're just gonna do it. And so they just introduced it and all forced the hand of all the other operators. And so I give WhatsApp, I don't know who they are, you know, whatever like little rogue emoji kind of posse there is inside the organization, but I give them credit for being like fearless and like going out there on that. But yes, they vary. It's like, and it just kind of depends on, you know, what setting, you know, the apps have in terms of overriding. Yes.
How conscious is the committee of passing emojis that have like double non-intended meanings? Like, for example, the emoji that's like the pointer finger like this.
Yeah.
Like,
what does it mean? I don't even know.
Everybody uses it as like a middle finger.
Oh, but there just is a middle finger. Yes.
Is it a middle finger?
There is a middle finger emoji. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to Michael, thanks to the Irish contingent on the International Standards Organization. That guy who passed it also is the one who gave us the Vulcan hands, the Vulcan signal. The more general question is how conscious is the committee of things with a double entendre? They can be as conscious as they can be, given that they are, you know, we skew like older white engineers, plus now a smattering of like Asian women who like, and like younger white women who are on the design part of the committee. Like, sometimes we don't know. Literally, I remember the headlines coming out like earlier this year, and it was like, Unicode has passed a tiny penis emoji. And I was like, what the hell are they talking about? And I was literally thinking, like, Oyster? Like, what did we pass? And it turns out that we like passed this thing that was like pinching, or not pinching, but it's like, you know, very small thing. And like, I honestly, like, that came up zero in any of the deliberations. Like, I saw, and I, you know, like, I emailed the list and I was like, just goes to show, like, kinds of, you know, you never anticipate, like, what people will take an emoji to mean. Like, right now, like, from what I hear, milk is now being used as a symbol for like white nationalism. Like, that was also kind of unexpected. So in some ways, what's wonderful about language is that it evolves and it's dynamic and it's grassroots up and it shouldn't be controlled by like, you know, the centralized posse in Silicon Valley. But you know, we are conscious about like certain things having connotations, like rope emojis coming down the pipeline. There was a lot of debate about you know, all the kinds of negative ways that rope can be used in contacts and how different cultures might react differently to rope emoji. So in as much as like, you know, this small posse of people can debate, there's also, we also put the emoji out for comment at a certain point and people will come back with thoughts for things that we didn't know as well. So, anyway, yes.
So I have a question about how do you deal with the fact that most of the people who are on this board are probably Americans, other than Oman and a couple of others.
Yeah.
So for example, when you have some international food that might be specific to a certain region.
Yes.
It's very frequent
in that region,
but it's not frequent
right
elsewhere.
Like mate emoji.
For example.
Yes.
How do you deal with that? Like as a
yeah.
As a board,
person, yes.
Or a committee.
So this is an issue, yes. This is an issue.
And another question is, like, why is it that it is this committee that has the power to choose what emojis we can have access to?
Right.
Like, who gives you, as a committee, the rights?
Right.
Like, this is a big question in tech in general.
Right. So two questions. It's like, what about all the foods from parts of the world that get, like, are not recognized by, like, people who sit in a room in Mountain View, California, or sometimes Sunnyvale, sometimes Cupertino, sometimes San Jose, but essentially mostly Silicon Valley. So that first question is, yeah, that's an issue. This is like, I spent a lot of time like fighting for more representative foods. Like, I would really like fufu, which is like, you know, the big kind of like a carbohydrate, like ball of yellow stuff, white stuff. In Africa, but it's not like it's super recognized by people sitting in that room. So you have to like spend all this time trying to convince them. I remember arepa. We just passed arepa. I honestly like kind of had to like go to the mat for this arepa because they're like, it doesn't like, I don't recognize it. I'm like, you don't recognize it, but trust me, like people who see this will know that it's arepa. You know, to the point where there's even an ASCII kind of like symbol for arepa, which is like, you know, //, and that is locally how they can like signal to someone, I want an arepa. And I'm like, if they can do that through ASCII, clearly it means something to them. So it's a lot of battles in our little you know, C-SPAN level discussions of emoji. So then the second question is, why is Unicode the one who are encoding these emoji, and like, you know, all the kind of moral implications that come with that? So they come, it came to Unicode because Unicode is very good at standardizing, and it standardizes across the major platforms like Microsoft and Apple and Google being the major ones. I mean, there are some other ones in there, but those are the three major ones. And so they standardize things. And so they were the ones who standardized these. Whether or not they should continue to standardize, probably consensus is no. But where does it go next? And like, who else would do it? You know, is there a process to sort of like decentralize it? That is all active debate. I mean, I can trust, you know, the old schoolers in Unicode don't love these debates about should we have skin tones on, you know, vampires. Like, that is not a debate they want to have. Like, they care sometimes more about the, you know, coding in minority languages around the world, and, you know, trying to preserve cultural heritage. So, but it's just the way that it evolved. You know, we can do what we can in that. Ta-da, more questions? Should we go? Okay, I don't even know how the live stream works. So like, we can just keep on going, but why don't we just keep on going?
Thank you so much, this is absolutely fascinating. I was wondering, what struck me that was curious is that in Unicode, there doesn't seem to be any Japanese representation.
So much Japanese representation.
You know? The emoji originated there.
Yes, so much Japanese representation. I mean, there's like all the holidays, a lot of the foods, Hotel.
On the committee itself.
On the committee itself.
And is that because there are global corporations, and therefore it's assumed that therefore through that corporation, Japan would have some kind of influence?
I know, it's like partially, okay, so why are there not Japanese people on the committee? So one, a lot of the there's just not Japanese companies on the committee. That being said, one of the original proposers of the sort of emoji set was a man named Kat Momoi, who is Japanese, like Japanese American probably at this point. And a lot of the other people who are active, especially from the Google side, their internationalization team is very international. They show up every so once in a while. I mean, like, the whole like bean debate came from the desire to have a soybean. And I think in general, it's like, who can show up 4 times a year in that room? Like, I just happen to be able to do that because I have a career that allows me to be flexible, but it is a lot of time and it's very, very far for many people to travel. And I think on some level, like, Japan isn't super into emoji. Like, they did their thing with emoji to kind of put it out into the world, and they're pretty well representative, so it's not like they have to like go and fight, you know, for like the onigiri emoji or anything like that. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of my take. And also, like, if they're going to pick their battles, they tend to pick it over the encoding, the actual like kanji, hiragana, katakana kind of stuff. It's like, about this. That's kind of my take. I mean, I might be like generalizing, but we haven't like had like these fervent battles with Japanese folks on emoji, I would say. Ta-da, are we good? Are we done? One more.
Sorry, one more.
No worries.
I mean, I think we've all kind of seen those posts where someone's like, my dad just died, crying emoji.
Yes.
Or maybe your mom inappropriately used eggplant.
Yeah.
She was really talking about it.
Yeah.
Do you think one day that many of the apps will have maybe a spell check or grammar check for emojis?
Yeah, so the question is like inappropriate use of emojis and whether or not the apps will one day have a spell check or grammar check. I do think that one thing is that emoji usage tends to be very localized in terms of like you have like little dialects emerge. So like we have the US dialect, but that is different from how they use the emoji in like Japan or China, which is very, very different, right? They're mostly in sort of a closed WeChat sticker world, and maybe different from France. And so you know, like a very interesting example is like now the peach has evolved as a symbol of impeachment, right? Or you just peach and the little herb thing for peach mint. But that's very specific to like an English sort of rebus construction. So what is my take on it? I don't know. Okay, I would say that the apps will suggest things. I don't know they'll like do the little red squiggle underneath anytime in the near future, like maybe in like 10 years or so. But I feel like at this point, everyone's still just trying to figure out like how do you get the emoji on, as opposed to like trying to prevent people from saying like bad things. And it's very funny because I actually was just at, I just gave a session, a big lecture where literally like someone who was like a total adult in the class had no idea what the eggplant emoji meant, you know, and we're like, where have you been for the last like 5 or 6 years? But I think it is kind of interesting to see like all these connotations like hop on and off different emojis. Like one of the interesting examples is the peach emoji. At a certain point a couple years ago, Apple updated it to be less butt-like, and then there were like protests, like howls and howls of protest during the beta kind of rollout. And then like to their credit, they flipped it back. So now you have your peach emoji just like you want it. So. Thank you very much. I think that's a good way to leave the lecture.